Mr. Bloom.
Hey, it's Max Fisher.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Max, my mom just showed up. Is it okay if I leave early? Over.
Sure, Charlie.
What's the secret, Max?
The secret?
Yeah, well, you seem to have it pretty figured out.
Secret, I don't know. I think you just gotta find something you love to do and then do it for the rest of your life. For me, it's going to Rushmore.
Shotgun.
Hey, Ronnie. Hey, Donnie. Hey, guys.
Get in the back. I said shotgun.
Get in the back, Donnie.
Let's go.
Did you invite that kid to your party?
Max Fisher.
Come on, Dad. There's going to be girls there. I'd rather die.
Pull your head out of your ass.
Welcome to Trilogy in Theory. My name is Webb, and this is my co-host, Mike, and we're starting a new month of movies, and we're starting with one that I actually like.
Oh.
And that's exciting.
Nice change of pace.
And I felt real bad, because I went over to my Criterion shelf and looked over, it was number 65 is on the Criterion number, and I went there, and it wasn't on my shelf, and I realized that I never got around to purchasing Rushmore on Blu-ray, even though it's one that I really like. And I actually had the DVD, and it went out of print. Oh, there it is. You're mocking me with it. You're mocking me with Rushmore on the on the camera. I did have the DVD. The Blu-ray, when it was announced, though, I sold my out-of-print DVD. And just, you know, whenever those Barnes & Noble sales happen, new stuff keeps coming out, and some of your old stuff on your wish list just keeps getting pushed down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened, unfortunately. So I'm going into this episode less prepared, I feel like, than maybe even you, because you have access to all these glorious features, including a commentary with Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson. I really dig Rushmore. I hadn't seen it in a dog's age. I watched it, and boy, do I still really like it. So much so that it makes me feel like some of the modern Wes Anderson stuff is almost like a parody of the kind of director he used to be. And I really want to get into that conversation. What did you think of Rushmore?
Somehow I liked it more now than I did as a teenager. And I was a huge fan of it as a teenager because I was one of the early adopters of Bottle Rocket. And I guess I'll have to, you know, be decidedly unhip here, even though they're on the Criterion release of Rushmore. Wes Anderson's first two features got a big push from MTV, which I'm guessing was the Paramount connection with Rushmore, which they talk about in the book. I mean, that Paramount was considering just going straight to video with this movie. But that being part of the Viacom umbrella, you have the Max Fisher players did the MTV Movie Awards. I guess the nominees that year, they did little packages that they could play on MTV to hype up the awards show. And on a prior MTV Movie Awards, he won Best New Filmmaker, and they did like a 10-minute thing, like just hyping up Bottle Rocket. So at that point, I don't even know if I was a teenager at the time. I'm like, what is this movie? Like, it's like they're giving out this, they're announcing the best new filmmaker. This is the voice you need to hear in the mid 90s. So this is prime time for directors being put on high, this little film called Bottle Rocket. And I've watched Bottle Rocket way more than I've watched Election, because as an adult, I kind of had the fear that, and this goes back to one of the many times I watched Election. I worked at a video store at the time, and I had a screener of it. And so that's how I got access to these movies that never came to theaters in my small town. And I remember making my dad and stepmom watch this movie, Rushmore, which I thought was fucking awesome. Now, I'm the target demo, I guess, because I'm into movies, and it's about this obnoxious teenager, this little rebel, but he's kind of a dork. And watching it, and it was one of those screeners that they would send to the video store, so I guess so someone wouldn't copy it. The film would occasionally go into black and white, and then it would have like text running across the bottom, like this is a screener. Like now it would have the watermark, like this has been sent to @TrilogyInTheory. Do not put this online. Like little @TrilogyInTheory would be on the bottom. So that was their way of doing it. And I remember my parents being like, why does this keep going to black and white? Is this a stupid, weird movie that you have us watching? I'm like, no, it's just the screener. It's, you know, copyright, you know. Then I'm like, just look past it. Aren't you into the music? Aren't you into the kid? Bill Murray, isn't he really funny? They didn't find it amusing at all. They found Max Fisher. They found Jason Schwartzman decidedly obnoxious and not in a clever way. So I always had this fear web that I would grow into that. I would be like, that was not as cool as I thought when I was the teenager, when I was the age of the character. So I've always leaned more towards Bottle Rocket because in Bottle Rocket, at least you have enough bullies that come around saying like, why don't you get a job? Like, why are you such a loser? So I feel like the film says all the mean things that allows the audience to enjoy it. And Rushmore has a little bit of that. But I think you would agree, all of the characters are kind of in Max Fisher's world. Like, there are bullies, but they get sucked into his vortex, into his bullshit. And you're talking about where Wes Anderson went. There's a hint of that in Rushmore, but it still looks like the real world. Like, when his dad works at a barbershop, it doesn't look like something out of a fucking cartoon. Like, it's it looks like a real place. And so let me wrap this up. Instead of my fear, which was totally unfounded, that I would no longer love Rushmore, which I do, I now hate his new stuff even more than I did before.
I feel the exact same way. I mean, and granted, I haven't seen Asteroid City. I haven't seen The French Dispatch. The last one I saw theatrically was Grand Budapest Hotel, and I was kind of bummed because F. Murray Abraham.
That's 10 years ago at this point, so you've decidedly checked out.
Yeah, but I did love Isle of Dogs, though. I'll say that. But I caught it on home video. I'm a sucker for claymation, anyways, and we have an unreleased half episode, and the reason I say half is because I recorded my part and you didn't record yours on Fantastic Mr. Fox.
We should just release that anyway and just let the let the audience speak to you and then see if they can match up in the conversation.
Imagine what Mike would say to we talked about how, well, how much work is Wes Anderson doing versus how much work are the animators doing in terms of you know, who's really, granted, they are taking his visual style and putting it on screen in an animated format, but I wonder how much of it is him just being like, oh, that looks good. That looks like something I would direct. You know?
Or they look at his films and are like, put a orange jacket on the fox, have him stand still awkwardly. We got this. That's the thing. There was like a TikTok trend like a year ago that was based on Wes Anderson, and people were making little TikToks making their life look like a Wes Anderson movie. It ain't that hard, which is not meant to be insulting, because it should be a compliment that his visual style, the language of his films, is now so iconic that people can easily mimic it. Not so much if you're doing Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is fantastic, and all the work that the animators did. You're not seeing that on TikTok. But yet, Rushmore, I just fell into it again. Like, it had been, this is one that I really have not, I think I've probably even seen Royal Tenenbaums more than I've seen Rushmore.
You know why? Because Rushmore is real. There is a sense of authenticity there that is missing in something like Grand Budapest Hotel. Which, again, one of the things I wanted to say, like, this is neither here nor there, but I was kind of bummed that you've got like these technically Indian characters being played by non-Indian people. And I was like, oh, that was a good opportunity to get some new blood in there. But F. Murray Abraham is great, and the the kid who plays Flash Thompson in the new Spider-Man movies, he's good too. But it just didn't resonate with me because it really felt like, wow, I'm definitely watching a Wes Anderson movie because of the way it looks and how idiosyncratic it is, and great. Everything is lined up perfect. Everything is so symmetrical. Yay. But you look at Rushmore and it doesn't feel like that. And I wonder if it is that 90s, you know, indie vibe. Is that there? Is that why? Is he slowly evolving into, you know, the super idiosyncratic character that we're used to now? I don't know. Because, like, Moonrise Kingdom, I still dug Moonrise Kingdom. I thought that had, that was very sweet. And it still had the come-of-age aspect, so it's a very sweet story. But now you kind of know what a Wes Anderson film is, right? You have an insane cast. Everybody has to kind of cater their performance to the way he is going to film it. You know, the camera's going to move from A to B. You better get your lines out. And it didn't feel like that with Rushmore. There was a lot of scenes where it's like, oh, we're just breathing and we're living in this world. And I really love that.
Well, all the characters are facets of just Wes Anderson in his later works. They're just, they're all, they all, his later films just feel like one of Max's plays. They all have the same cadence. They all, like, the child prodigy has got everyone to say the line exactly the way he would want to say it. And Bottle Rocket and Rushmore, it's about people with those hopes and dreams. I wish I could remake the world as I see it, whether it's Owen Wilson thinking he's going to be this, you know, Danny Ocean, he's going to be this mastermind criminal. Or you have Max, who, like, loves Rushmore. He loves the school, even though he's a terrible, terrible student, which I wanted to get to because I felt like this is going to be the push and pull with Webb. You so pride yourself on education and being especially, like, a young mind who's engaged with the world. And what's interesting about Max is he is so engaged with the goings-ons of his fancy little private school, but not at all with the actual work to be there. He just wants to be the guy who goes to Rushmore, but he doesn't really want to go to Rushmore. So I want to ask, what did you think about him as a character in that regard?
So I don't like Jason Schwartzman very much. Like, I don't think he's a great actor. I don't even know how many starring roles he's had outside of Rushmore, to be completely honest with you. You see him pop up here and there. Oh, he's in Scott Pilgrim. Oh, isn't he funny? Great. But I've long periods of time with Jason Schwartzman are not my version of a good time. But the character, even though he is very, very annoying, I found myself vicariously living through him because I was hampered by all the schoolwork I had to do. I wanted to be in plays. I wanted to be on the football team and all these different extracurricular things that I was never really allowed to do. And I know that might sound strange, but for anybody who is, you know, Indian or Asian, there's like the
F. Murray Abraham comes from he would understand.
Right? Yes. Anybody who comes from like parents from, you know, that immigrant background where so much pressure is there to succeed academically, a lot of that extracurricular stuff sounds more like, oh, that's just stuff for fun. Or it's like, oh, it'll look good in on a college resume, or a college application. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. It's not there to enrich your life, you know. So, no, I was very much on board with the character enjoying the things that had nothing to do with academia, which I was like, oh, I wish I could do that. So, yes, I could absolutely see you thinking that I'm going to absolutely hate this character. And to some extent, I do, because I'm like, he's getting to live the dream. But no, I thought it was all right. And you know what? The arc is also very believable. You do dislike him for quite a bit, I think, in the beginning of the film. And by the end of the film, it speaks to the quality of the writing and the performances by everybody that you kind of want him to succeed by the end. Even though, you know, he's got this like wonderfully cute Asian girl who's like clearly captivated by him. Like, what are you doing, man?
And also
you
know, a liar like him. A fraud. I think if you've not come around to it by the end, then, you know, you checked out at some point for, you're talking about the arc where, yes, he's obnoxious, he's annoying, he is boisterous, you know, he's he shares the tendencies of other, you know, probably many teenagers who's embarrassed to their family because of their own sort of delusions about where they're going to be, that they need to get ahead for respect. I think that's perfectly countered by Bill Murray, who is a rich guy that just has one of those sort of bland rich guy jobs where it's like, what is he? He sells steel or something. Like, I don't, it just feels like it's just a placeholder. Like, he's rich. But he's immediately intrigued by Max for all of his various pursuits of all these different clubs, because he is multifaceted that way, but also that he's taken, like, he's really seems to be one of the only, like, characters that is filled with all these youthful performers that is embracing the fact that you're talking about he's only going to be young for a certain amount of time. This is about the only time he can really fuck around, which is still, like, the expectation would be that you need to be prepping for your adult life here. And he seems to be the only one that the Max Fisher character, like, one of his, you know, charming qualities is that, you know, when he's in his 40s or 50s, he can look back and be like, wow, like, my teenage years, like, he just absolutely went for it. Like, he did everything he could do when the only thing that was going to be lost was probably, like, I don't know, a scholarship, which he doesn't seem like he's a gifted student anyway. So,
no, so what, not at all.
What difference does it make? And it is, it's quaint that the opening sequence of the film is him being regarded for his ability to be naturally gifted in anything that involves, like, math or academics, because that's so far afield of what he is. Like, it's like, I don't know if at a certain point in before the movie starts of this character acknowledge that he just has to give up on those pursuits. I don't know if you would agree with that sentiment, but he clearly has pivoted. He's made himself the main character on this campus while excelling in almost nothing except being present. He's present for everything, every activity. He is there. He's just not very good at them, including wrestling. You know, he has a brief entrance where he just gets pinned immediately.
And that's, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because another moment in the film where I laughed. Rushmore is a funny film. Like, I don't really find the comedy very much in his later stuff, but this all feels very genuine. Bill Murray, somebody who I'm not a huge Bill Murray fan. I love him in Rushmore. He is so funny and so understated. I love when he's talking to Max on the phone. He's like, yeah, you know, I think this teacher of yours is very overrated. And he's like spying on her at the same time. Like, just so good. So good. When he's reaching back to, like, hit his kids in the car. Absolutely brilliant stuff there from him. And it almost makes me dislike this performance because, like, damn it. Like, you have so much stuff out there. None of it is as good as this for me. Olivia Williams, also very, very charming. And you know what? You've got that central cast. Maybe that's... I keep trying to dissect his, like, filmography here. It's like, why doesn't the later stuff feel like Rushmore? And maybe it's because you've got the smaller cast that you're focused on.
It's the Olivia Williams being the object of affection for both Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray's characters that will create this... in the second act, this very competitive love triangle trying to win her over, which is, you know, and she says it. She's someone that can admire Max, but also multiple times, like, you are a teenager and I'm a grown woman. I love some of the, like, it's the failing of Bill Murray is that he actually treats Max as a rival to this woman, which just kind of displays probably the immaturity of the men in a lot of Wes Anderson films. It's usually the women that have the upper hand, Angelica Houston, or even, you know, the maid that Luke Wilson falls for in Bottle Rocket. Thank God there's a language barrier, so she's not privy to how stupid, like, her boyfriend's companions are. But it's interesting in this type of broad-ish comedy that has the romantic element, for Olivia Williams to be the object of affection, even Bottle Rocket. They're very sort of, like, I don't want flat, but not in a bad way. They're very grounded characters, and it's the men pursuing them that are, like, the manic pixie dream boys that just look stupid in their pursuits. And that's not really a dynamic you see too often. Usually, you know, if you're going to have that energy, both parties will be manic in their, they'll sort of banter in the dance. Just allowing them to sort of reflect the insanity of the characters. I think that's kind of what's missing from later Wes Anderson movies is that everyone's fucking insane. So you never have anyone reflecting just like, God, this is fucking obnoxious. This is stupid because everyone's they're in the circus already. And I'm, look, clearly that's what Wes Anderson wants to make. I mean, that is the paradigm of his movies.
Even in Moonrise Kingdom, which I like, the little boy and the little girl are like, well, of course they're meant for each other because they're so bizarre and unlike anybody else in the film and anybody else you've ever met in your entire life. And so that's absolutely a great point. Boy, speaking of Olivia Williams, that's another thing that, like, you know, you're kind of living vicariously through the character for me. Like, who hasn't at some point in their schooling career found, like, oh, that's, like, the teacher that you have a crush on, and he goes for it. Well, you can't go for it. That's not a thing you do in real life. But Max Fisher does without doing it, but he does. And so another thing I was like, boy, he's just living the dream.
Don't do any pornography research on this because we'll never record our next episode. That is a well-established trope in that field.
At the risk of outing myself, I'm aware. Don't need to do any extra research.
Now, if there's a Rushmore specific one, I would be impressed. Like, really? Like, they jumped over 1998's Rushmore, which is included in the best movie year ever.
I mean, it's so easy. Fuck more. That's all you need. Like, it's so easy.
But do they have to look like Max Fisher? Because that's I think I'm even punting on Bill Murray. Max Fisher in particular, the eyebrows, the glasses, usually some bodily harm has been done to him. Not appealing.
I feel bad for the female porn actress who's going to be like, come on. Like, this is what I have to work with. Very good. Wes Anderson does have his cake a little bit here, where you have a very interesting cast with someone like Brian Cox, and you have Luke Wilson pop in, and they're kind of present throughout the film.
God, I felt for the Brian Cox character as the...
Oh, me too.
The dean or whatever of Rushmore, where even when he has like a stroke, Max Fisher comes to his bedside. The man can't even die without Fisher bothering him back to life again.
Right. And then, you know, where does he end up? Watching his like magnum opus at the end. So good. I don't know what else to say about this film other than it's just so good.
I'm going to thank you, Webb, for this podcast. I don't know how much longer I would have further delayed. It may have been one of those teenage fandoms. I've been like, no, just leave it where it was as a cherished memory and don't go back. But man, I had such a good time with this one. I was so shocked. And I was like, I can only imagine this is what Webb felt like when I presented him She's All That. This is the high he got from that film.
And now I think I'll finally, you know, it'll finally get me to go out and purchase the Criterion because I really do want to hear the commentary and all that. I immediately went on to the Criterion channel account that I have, and it was nowhere to be seen. I was real upset. I was hoping to listen to that commentary. No, this is an absolutely wonderful film, and it gets me as much joy as it gives me. It also frustrates me because like I don't like much of Bill Murray's other work. I don't like that much of Wes Anderson's like later stuff. I mean, I'm glad he's still coming out with movies. That's great. Like, I don't want every director to be like Tarantino, where it's like, no, it's 10 films and I'm done. I'd rather live in a world where we have, you know, 7 not great Wes Anderson films if I can get a few that I absolutely love. So, no, this is wonderful. And even Royal Tenenbaums, I didn't really connect to that much. And I think that's the one that really put him on the map. I felt like after that, everybody knew.
Yeah, I think that one had some degree of mainstream success, which I don't know if it's just presenting, you know, a decidedly more famous ensemble at that point, even though, you know, Bill Murray returns, the Wilson brothers are back in, Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, at the end of the 2000s, early 2000s, Gene Hackman, who hated working, Gene Hackman hated working with Wes Anderson so much and hated the production of Royal Tenenbaums that apparently no one knew when he left, like he filmed his last scene and he just walked off, got in his car and drove away, like, and never spoke to any of them again. Brian Cox in real life. He was playing the Brian Cox character on set. Like, oh, this again. I got to go do Welcome to Mooseport, and then I'm done.
I was so excited for Welcome to Mooseport because...
Man, I hope Wes Anderson stumbles across this podcast. We're like, his filmography sucks. Now let me tell you about Mooseport. I was fucking pumped.
Here's how much I love Ray Romano. I was psyched for the direct-to-DVD film called Grilled with him and Kevin James. It's essentially Pulp Fiction, except meat salesman.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Rushmore's great.